Welcome to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. Thank you for being here with us today. I'm Jason Kong alongside Bill Alexander. Bill, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Jason. Hope you are too.
I'm doing great, Bill. Always appreciate being here with you. And I know things are heating up a little bit, literally, with the temperature outside, but I'm pleased.
Oh, that's a good thing.
it is a good thing, but you know, you're withstanding with your sweater vest, so
I feel good.
Well, Bill, you know, a few weeks back, I feel like you're the only person who is sounding the alarm bells with this Corporate Transparency Act, and you've brought it up a few times on the show, but maybe we start from the beginning again and explain exactly what this is and why people need it on the radar.
Well, the fact is that there are a lot of small businesses in this country, over 31 million. And frankly, anyone who has anything to do with a small business needs to pay attention, because this Corporate Transparency Act, which has come into existence and is now being enforced as of this year, is burdensome. And quite frankly, it's the kind of thing where people need to be prepared for actually complying with this new act, and also complaining to their congressmen and senators, and I'm talking about in Washington, about imposing this burden on all of us. And, you know, obviously I'm a business owner. I have a law firm, and I have a business, an LLC that owns my real estate, and I have other holdings myself. So, yeah, I'm upset. But at the same time, and I would also issue this warning to professionals who have anything to do with a small business. And so clearly that would include lawyers who help folks create an LLC or a corporation, because they have to be involved in this Corporate Transparency Act as well. But so many folks, you know, we like to ignore everything that's coming out of Washington, but the fact is that when they require us to do something, and with penalties and fines and jail time for not complying with it, then that will get our attention. But I want to, for folks to understand that it's not just Bill Alexander who's saying this is burdensome, it's going to cost small businesses a lot of money to comply, but small business organizations, the National Small Business Association, the NSBA, and the National Federation of Independent Businesses, the NFIB, both are very much opposed to this law. And of course, there are a lot of other organizations as well. But there's no question that the CTA, the Corporate Transparency Act, is cumbersome. It's intrusive. It's punitive. It has been held unconstitutional by a federal court in Alabama, but that, unfortunately, that court decided not to make that pronouncement nationwide, so it only applies in that one case. And the bottom line is that even if you don't mind telling the government of everything about you and everything that's involved in your business, which, of course, that reporting requirement is cumbersome and time-consuming. And, yeah, we all have a lot of extra time to tell the government about stuff. It's like the burden of preparing income taxes, where you have to get your income taxes ready for your CPA. Well, this is just another burdensome exercise on anybody that has anything to do with a small business. And so this is focused directly on small businesses, sub-S corporations, limited liability companies, just about any company that has to report to the Secretary of State to tell them who the manager and, you know, that kind of thing. But what we do with Secretary of State is not burdensome. This Corporate Transparency Act asks for and requires verification for everybody who has any authority to make a decision. It also requires to report on anybody who's at least a 25% owner, and also who has anything to do with organizing the business, and that includes a lot of professionals. And it's the burden is on the business. And so if you have anything to do with a small business, and of course, a lot of my clients, I've organized hundreds of these companies over the years. The fact is that the company has to report on me as well, because I basically organized the company for them. So I would tell anybody who has anything to do with it is that this is something that once you look it up, you'll complain yourself to Congress, and Congress is actually looking, and no, this is not overly political. This was a bipartisan law that was created with almost unanimous approval, which blows my mind that Congress would do this, because it's a huge breach of privacy. But it's not only about the company, it's about owners and potentially beneficial owners. And a lot of these companies are held by trusts, and then they want to know all about your trust and the applicants. And the thing about it is, then when you give them all this private information that's none of their business, they will share this business. This is Homeland Security through the Financial Crimes Network of the government. And they'll share this information with any government agency, U.S., federal, state, local, tribal, foreign law enforcement agencies, judges, prosecutors, other authorities, financial institutions, federal regulators, Department of the Treasury. The bottom line is the government will share this, all this private information, with anybody and everybody. And, you know, it's bad enough. Bottom line is, and if a company fails to report timely, there's a $500 a day fine. And if you willfully fail to do it, there's a $10,000 fine and imprisonment of up to 2 years. And so, yeah, I'm upset about it. But now, what about professionals like me who help create, you know, we apply to create these businesses? About the only option that we have, it is to get what's our own personal FinCEN number. And we have to apply and give verification on our information, which, okay. And then I need to give my FinCEN number to all of these different companies that need to report, because otherwise they would be responsible for telling the government about me, where I work, where I live, what my Social Security number is, what my driver's license looks like. With verification, and if I move or if I die, they have to report that to the government. And they have to do it within 30 days. I mean, how crazy is this new law? So I'm just simply saying, you can complain, but you better get ready to comply with this law. Because this is not a joking matter. It is something that is extraordinarily important that we get ready for it. And, of course, the other scary thing is that Congress is even talking about expanding it to real estate transactions. Now, you know, if you're a businessman, knowing that this is going to be a burden on you, it's not only a burden of time. It's going to be a burden of money, because think about it. right now, it means that the professionals who have to help you are going to charge you a bunch of money that they didn't have to charge you before because you didn't have to do it. And it's all for reasons that are, in my book, totally breaches of privacy that the government doesn't need. They haven't needed it before, so why in the heck do they think they need it now? And to me, it's just ridiculous that Congress would impose this burden on the... I mean, I go back to the fact that that law-abiding citizens will do their best to comply with this, and the folks that they're actually after will never comply with this to begin with. And so to burden everyone else because of, it's the kind of thing that just, to me, is just... awful.
Well, I can tell it's got you upset, and there's good reason why. And, you know, we've detailed those, and it is a burden for those. So be sure that you are aware of this Corporate Transparency Act and taking steps to make sure that you're not falling behind on the process or sticking your head in the sand. Because as Bill mentioned, there are some severe penalties aligned with not reporting in a timely fashion. We're going to get to some asset protection items and information related to our free webinars happening next month. We just had our May webinars this past Wednesday. WG Alexander and Associates puts on a set of free webinars the second Wednesday of every month, and they cover the same two subjects. The first session deals with long-term care assistance. This goes over the subject of Medicaid, and there's, boy, so much misinformation and half-truths related to Medicaid that this is really a helpful way to find quality information for those families who are dealing with a long-term care crisis and the costs associated with those as well. And finding financial assistance for most middle-class families is all about what this webinar is trying to achieve. It also deals with VA benefits as well. It's free to attend. You can go to wgalaw.com, click on the seminars button at the top of the page, sign up for the June webinars happening on Wednesday, June 12th. The afternoon session deals with asset protection and trust planning. Again, both are free, highly educational opportunities to learn from the team at WG Alexander and Associates. Register online at wgalaw.com. Taking a short break, but we'll be back with more. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. Learn more about Bill and WG Alexander and Associates at wgalaw.com. That's their website. You can find information about scheduling some time to speak with an elder law attorney. You can also find information related to their free webinars that happen the second Wednesday of every month. The next set of webinars is happening on Wednesday, June 12th. Learn more about long-term care assistance as well as asset protection and trust planning by going to wgalaw.com, clicking on the seminars button at the top of the page. I'm Jason Kong here with Bill Alexander. And Bill, you know, I thought we were out of the woods. We made it past tax day, and now I see here on the docket that we're talking about IRS audits.
Well, the fact is, yeah, we April 15th came, and it's gone by now, and so folks are looking for what we have to do for next year, if you will. But the fact is that part of it is that the Internal Revenue Service does it through computers and otherwise. Review the tax returns that we file. You know, they're looking for mistakes and they're looking for other issues with our tax returns. And one thing that is really important for particularly for some folks to know is that the Internal Revenue Service has received a good bit of additional funding. In fact, for a number of years, the IRS was actually, their budgets were cut. And so they, as a result, lost a lot of positions. But many of those positions are coming back at this point because they're fully funded now. And what that's going to mean to folks is that the IRS will be conducting far more audits than they have in the past. And so this is simply a word to relax to some folks and a word of caution to others. And here's the thing. The question is, who will the Internal Revenue Service focus on as it relates to these new audits that will start taking place this year? And quite frankly, if you are a regular taxpayer, then you can relax. It's highly unlikely that your tax return will be audited. I mean, yes, all of them get audited a little bit because they have computer software that basically does that on an automatic basis. But the fact is that for the majority of us who I would consider, you know, normal middle class taxpayers, and we're the ones who pay the bulk of taxes, folks. There's no question about that. But our tax returns will be audited pretty much and is the same small percentage that it has been for the last number of years. So what returns will be much, much more likely to be audited will be high earning taxpayers. You know, folks who are in the highest or next to the highest tax brackets. So those folks making hundreds of thousands of dollars per year. And I'm not talking about where a capital gain is reported, where you sell a piece of property, but those folks who have very high income, those folks who are typically in the highest tax bracket or close to it are far more likely now to be audited because the focus of the new audits will be high income taxpayers. So the rest of us can sleep at night, but the folks who are in the high earning tax brackets are likely, much more likely, a much higher percentage of those returns will actually be audited. And I think that's important information for folks to have. Now, I want to turn to the fact that, you know, we talk about estate planning and the fact that folks should have, at a minimum, basic documents. And so when I talk about basic documents, I often talk about wills and how wills can be used. And sometimes folks should have a trust in their wills called a testamentary trust. I talk about a general durable power of attorney and how seniors particularly should, if they have a trustworthy agent to appoint, that they should have an enhanced power of attorney. And I talk about how important it is for folks to have a healthcare power of attorney so that if they cannot communicate in a hospital, that their agent can make appropriate healthcare decisions for them. And then there are other documents I talk about as well, you know, an advance directive for natural death and a medical release for HIPAA compliance and a digital release. And so, quite frankly, everyone should have six basic legal documents. And of course, what I want to focus on is, okay, I've told you need a power of attorney for financial affairs, a general durable power of attorney. And I've told you, you need a healthcare power of attorney. All right, so what is it? You need to name a trustworthy person to be your agent, okay? And more often than not, if you're married, that agent is going to be your spouse. Obviously, if your spouse is healthy and mind is good, those kind of things, then normally you're going to name your spouse. If you have children and you have reliable children, not everybody's blessed like that, but if you have good, honest children that love you and would want to do anything for you, then oftentimes one of your children or more than one of your children can be named as your agent. So you've named them and now you need them. So what happens, what does the agent need to know as it relates to, I'm mom's agent. I'm her agent as named in her general durable power of attorney. So what does that mean to me? Well, first of all, it means that you have a fiduciary duty to your mom. Or if it's some, if it's your dad or some other person who's named you as agent, you have a fiduciary duty to the principal. And what does that mean in North Carolina? Because you have to understand that state law can differ from one state to another. And your power of attorney is based on North Carolina law if you live here in North Carolina. Well, your fiduciary duty means that if you know what your principal, and I used the example of your mom, if you know what mom would do, you know what she would decide under a circumstance, but she is in a situation where she can't do it herself, your job is to do what she would do. In other words, to do what your principal would do. Because quite frankly, people make decisions. They have, we're all unique individuals as human beings. And just because I would do this, you might do that. We don't. And if you know how somebody feels about a certain thing and what they would do under a certain circumstance, your job as agent is to do what they would do. Now, if you have no clue what they would do, then your secondary duty is to do what's in their best interest. And so those fiduciary duties are high callings with a lot of law behind them. So you have to understand that that's what you're responsible for. You have that fiduciary duty. Now, the second thing that you need to understand after knowing that your fiduciary duty, no, first of all, let's say that you didn't know that mom appointed you as agent. And let's just say for whatever reason that mom didn't ask you, you didn't agree to it, and you don't want to do it. Do you have the right to not do it? In other words, not act as agent. And the answer is yes. You don't have to, you don't have a duty to be the agent if you don't want to be. And if you don't want to be, you probably should resign. Now, I would obviously, that's a very important decision for you to make, because just because you're busy doesn't mean you shouldn't serve. Because truthfully, the best agents are always busy. They always have other things they need to do. But there was a reason that mom appointed you as her agent. And that means that she thinks that you're the best person to handle things on her behalf. And so, you need to take that into consideration, because she may not have an alternate agent or a successor agent if you should resign. Or the document may authorize you to name someone else who would be a good agent that's honorable and trustworthy and would do what needs to be done. And who your agent is a very, should be a carefully decided decision And part of it is this: when it comes to finances and having responsibility for people's money, one of the things that I always have to worry about is the fact that abuse, financial abuse or neglect, 80% of the time, it's a family member, a greedy family member, who is taking advantage of having that responsibility that was given to them by a parent. So, you know, if the parent is naming the oldest child simply because he or she is the oldest child and not because they're the most responsible or the most honorable, you might get a bad result because not recognizing the fact that people will take advantage. You know, obviously, if you're fortunate enough to have children who respect each other and trust each other and get along and are on the same page, that's extremely helpful. But lots of families aren't that way. There's disagreements among the children. One lives here and another lives far away, you know, or there are lots of dynamics that go on when it comes to your agent. But the fact is that the next most important thing after understanding your responsibility, if you take it on, is to read the document. And the fact is that most people mistakenly think, oh, I'm the power of attorney. I can do whatever I need to do. And that is not the case. The fact is that most powers of attorney are very limited in scope. And so there, and quite frankly, one of the reasons I don't like the short form power of attorney in North Carolina and also the short form in many other states is because it misdirects the people who are trying to use it. Short forms always refer to a authorities contained in the general statutes, in other words, in the statute books. And typically, there are a number of limitations. If the short form says that you can gift, the statute's going to say you can gift, but you're limited to this standard, that standard. It might say, depending on what statute says, that you can only give historical gifts, you can only give the exemption amount, which is annual exemption is or exclusions, $18,000 a year per person today. Or it may be that you can only give money, you can't give real estate. There are lots and lots of, or who you can give it to. There are lots of limitations as to a power that says that you might be able to gift. Or any other authority in there is going to have lots and lots of limitations. So fact is, you not only need to read the document to see what your authority is, but if it's a short form, then you need to get the longer version of those authorities so you know what you can do and what you cannot do, because there's a lot more cannot do's than people realize.
That's great advice. And if you would like to have your documents reviewed by an elder law attorney or have them created, if you have yet to do so, you can go to wgalaw.com, schedule some time to speak with an elder law attorney. You can also find information at wgalaw.com related to their free webinars that happen the second Wednesday of every month. The next set of webinars is happening on Wednesday, June 12th. Learn more about long-term care assistance, Medicaid, VA benefits, forms of financial assistance available to most middle-class families who are dealing with a long-term care crisis. The afternoon session deals with asset protection and trust planning. Both are free to attend, no cost to you, just a wonderful way to learn more from the fine folks at WG Alexander & Associates, and you can do it from the comfort of your own home. All you need is a device with internet access and an email address, and you're good to go. Go to WGALaw.com, click on the seminars button to learn more. We're taking a short break, but we'll be back after this. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be back shortly. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. WGALaw.com is where you can go to achieve a multitude of things, whether it's scheduling some time to speak with an elder law attorney at WG Alexander & Associates, or attending the WG Alexander & Associates free webinars that happen the second Wednesday of every month. Next set of webinars is Wednesday, June 12th. Learn more about Medicaid, VA benefits, forms of financial assistance available to families dealing with a long-term care crisis, as well as asset protection and trust planning. I'm Jason Kong here with Bill Alexander. And Bill, speaking of trust planning, we were discussing the importance of selecting your agent.
Yes, and this goes beyond trust. And a lot of folks don't have trust, but folks who don't have trust rely on powers of attorney. And powers of attorney are very important documents for even those folks who have trusts. And so I was talking about what an agent should look at when they're the financial power of attorney, and that's under the general durable power of attorney. But what about healthcare? So here we are, and you've been named as the agent for mom or dad for their healthcare purposes. Now, with healthcare, it basically means that authority springs, in other words, becomes effective when a doctor is not comfortable with mom making or trying to communicate a decision relating to her health care. Of course, same thing's true for dad. But the doctor is the one who's the arbiter as to whether or not a health care agent should be consulted and make the decision. Because the doctor's typically concerned about if the patient understands what's going on, understands what the options are and what the risks of each option might be, and also to make a decision. I want to do this. I don't want to do that. All very, very important. And if the doctor's not comfortable with the patient understanding what's going on, then the doctor should turn to the agent for those decisions. So again, how do you make a decision? How do you do that? Now, again, you have a fiduciary duty, and it's the same one I described. The number one is, if you know what mom would do, you need to make a decision consistent with what mom would want for herself. If you don't know what mom would do, then you need to make a decision that you believe is in her best interest. So you have the same fiduciary rules, but typically, and now sometimes for religious reasons or other reasons, a healthcare power of attorney might have some limitations in it. Most powers of attorney for healthcare do not have limitations in it. So if you don't have limitations, then your ability to make a decision is any appropriate healthcare decision that's lawful and recommended by the doctor is certainly going to be appropriate. But so what kind of limitations might you see in a healthcare power of attorney? Well, for religious reasons, I've seen lots of folks over time limit to where they do not want blood transfusions, don't, unless it's legally required, they do not want an autopsy performed, and there are other limitations. It's not unusual for a person who's been treated for mental health at any time to authorize a shock therapy because it's extraordinarily painful. It works about half the time, but it's always painful. And so most people who've gone through it ever in the past would never allow it to be done again. So that's not unusual. But okay, let's say that you have no limitations. You've been through the document because you always should read the document. Then your first option is to always do what mom would have wanted, and otherwise then you do what's in her best interest. But the thing about it is that spouses typically talk about things like that. But let's say you're not a spouse, so you haven't. The key thing is to get mom and or dad into a discussion. And these discussions typically are going to be around a dining table or the breakfast room table, if you will. And these are the kind of things that kids don't want to talk about normally. It's like, don't talk about that, Dad. I don't want to hear it. You know, this is, you know, we'll do it a different time. And that means never. So the point is that this is where mom and dad need to, and as agents, you actually want to know how they feel about certain types of issues and what they would want you to do if you were acting as their agent. And of course, from who do you select as your agent? In my opinion, you select the person who's close to you in the family who would make decisions consistent with what you would do for yourself. And, you know, it's really funny because we have lots of clients who they have a child who's a doctor or a nurse, and it's the kind of thing where if you'd want to defer to the doctor or nurse to do what they think is right, that's fine. But from my perspective, it really should be the person who's most likely to make a decision consistent with what you would want. And frankly, sometimes folks in the medical profession are skewed in terms of how they feel about certain things that may or may not be consistent with how you feel about those same things. And so I would simply say that if your doctor or nurse child doesn't think the way you think, then they may not be the most appropriate agent for you to appoint. So but the most important thing I can say, because like I said, spouses will generally talk about these things in private, but it also needs to be discussed. And if you're an alternate or successor agent to mom and dad, then this is a discussion that you really want to have with them so that they can confide in you in terms of how they feel about some difficult decisions that can be made.
Can be some pretty open conversations and some hard ones to get started, as you alluded to, Bill, but making sure that everyone is on the same page is such a critical part of planning, and making sure that you've got the right agent chosen is key as well. If you would like to have some documents drawn up or have any documents that you've had created in the past reviewed, maybe you've never had them reviewed by an elder law attorney before, we highly suggest you do that. And I will highly suggest that you reach out to WG Alexander & Associates. You can go to wgalaw.com to schedule an appointment. You can also find information on their free webinars by clicking on the seminars button at the top of the page at wgalaw.com. Learn more about long-term care assistance, Medicaid, VA benefits, forms of financial assistance available to middle-class families and below and above who are dealing with a long-term care crisis. You can also learn more about asset protection and trust planning by going to wgalaw.com, clicking on the seminars button, and registering for one of those sessions. It's free to do so, no cost to you. The next set of webinars is happening on Wednesday, June 12th. Be sure to sign up now to reserve your spot. Taking a quick break, but we'll be back with more. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be back after this. Listening to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. WGALaw.com is where you can go to find more information about Bill, the whole team at WG Alexander & Associates, and also information related to their free webinars, which are happening on Wednesday, June 12th. They do these the second Wednesday of every month, and you can attend remotely All you need is a device with internet access and an email address, and you are good to go. Register ahead of time by going to WGALaw.com, clicking on the seminars button, or calling the office, 919-256-7000, 919-256-7000. I am Jason Kong here with Bill Alexander, and Bill, we're talking all about the role of the agent and the importance that plays with a fiduciary responsibility.
Well, and in fact, we have at least one more, and that's is what if you've been named as a successor trustee under a trust? Now, there's some confusion because typically when you have a trust, you also have powers of attorney. And folks need to understand that even if it's the same agent that you've appointed for both your power of attorneys and your trust, they're wearing two different hats. In other words, the power of attorney can be used for property that is not in your trust. And if you have property that's held by the trustee for the trust, then you must be a trustee to handle it. In other words, power of attorney doesn't have any authority over trust property. You have to be a trustee. So that's important. But again, the most important thing for a trustee to do. Now, if you've created a trust for yourself and it's a revocable trust, you don't need to worry about it because you can do anything you want to. That's one of the nice things about a revocable trust. You can invest any way you want. You can spend any way you want. You can sell property, buy property with the trust, change the trust anytime you want. It's pretty flexible, you know, call it loosey-goosey. But let's say now, though, that you're a successor trustee. It was created by your parents or grandparents, and you're in charge now. Well, the fact is that the first thing you really should do is spend a good long time reading the trusts. Now, some trusts are simple, and it's all tax-based and complex, and there's not much direction in it. But the fact is that many well-written trusts are going to have lots of directions in it. I know the trusts I create have disability plans for the parents, and then they have guidance to be used for disability, guidance to be used for the trust that's created after their death. And there's, you know, typically my trusts are discretionary trusts. Sometimes we create special needs trusts. And if you're a family member trustee for special needs, you really need a professional trustee to help you with it or the like. Otherwise, you're going to screw up the public benefits that are needed. And so I can't emphasize enough, you need to read the trust first.
Great advice. And if you would like to speak with an elder law attorney, you can go to WGALaw.com or call 919-256-7000, 919-256-7000. A quick break and back. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be right back. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. Be sure to go to WGALaw.com if you would like to speak with an elder law attorney. Someone from the team at WG Alexander & Associates can help you have your documents reviewed or set up some legal documents for you. Don't forget, at WGALaw.com, you can also register for their free webinars. Second Wednesday of every month. Next set of webinars is Wednesday, June 12th. Learn more about long-term care assistance. If you need to learn more about Medicaid, VA benefits, or forms of financial assistance for you or a loved one dealing with a long-term care crisis, this is essential information for you. Or if you want to learn more about asset protection and trust planning, go to WGALaw.com. Click on the seminars button at the top of the page. that's going to do it for us today. On behalf of Bill Alexander, I'm Jason Kong. You've been listening to Asset Protection Today with attorney Bill Alexander. Have a wonderful day.